All right, we're here with the Wait What If podcast. I have Mike Stojic. How do you say your last name again?
That's pretty good. Stojic.
Stojic.
It's close.
Here to talk today. We're not sure really we're going to talk about. It's going to be a random one where we drink whiskey and just chat, I guess. So I was just telling them before we brought this up how I got the music for this. So yeah, it's called Free Music Archive, and people just, I guess, make and mix and do anything they want to do. And yeah, check it out. So I got... some of it's pretty good quality. So this is actually the song I usually play when I talk about my guest list. So Mike is a former Marine. Am I right? There's no ex-Marines and all that stuff.
No, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Former Marine, entrepreneur. You're working on that,
quite,
right?
Not quite an entrepreneur yet. I think I have to be successful first in whatever endeavor it is that I'm getting involved in.
That's true.
About myself, anything.
I mean, but that's what you're
that's the goal. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right, so we can talk about that. That's why you like whiskey so much. You're opening up a bar. I get that's it right. Now. Okay. What else? We were talking about former wrestler. Anything else? Anything else I'm missing? Philosopher.
Oh, it was a minor of mine. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I wanted a double major, but. What am I going to get? How am I going to make money in philosophy?
Bring that music down there. Paul, who helped us build my swing set in the back there, he's a philosopher.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's heavy into philosophy. Heavy, like next level stuff that you're not even going to... like, I'll talk to him and I'll be like, did you ever just think about, you know, how big space is? And he's like, well, and then they'll start rattling off like 18 philosophers and their theories. And he's like, read this book, what?
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I knew he was like an outdoors. He's like an outdoors guy, but I had no idea he was a big philosopher.
Yeah. Nice guy. I like Paul. I got to say that I'm on the, he can hear this podcast. So I got to say, like, when we turn it off, I'm like,
is this live streaming? Can we not edit this just in case?
Yeah, no, this isn't live streaming. I'm not ready for that thing. Not yet. Really, and the good thing is we can edit out stuff that sucks. I learned how to do that because we had some podcasts that when I was starting, it was just a train wreck. We're just sitting there looking at each other like, what do we do? I think I was telling you why I started. I was just bored and I was spending too much money on my other hobbies. And this one was kind of like you just pay for all the stuff initially, which isn't even that much. I mean, this setup is completely reverse engineered. I was like, how can I make this work? And I just kind of went back and now it does. I don't know. I still don't know how it works, but it tends to work.
I think it's awesome. I'd be too afraid to do my own though. I'm afraid right now.
Really? No one's listening. That's the best part.
I know, but I feel like the whole world is watching or listening.
The cool thing about it, and this is one of those, I like to think on that next level. Well, at least I think it's the next level. It's really, so a toddler thinks of one level and then a first grader, that's kind of the level that I think. So to me, that's okay. Next level. And then there's adults. But I like to think of it is what's cool about podcasts is, so if this was a local radio broadcast, it would just be whoever tuned in around here.
Right.
This is actually broadcasting to anyone around the world who can listen to it at any time. So actually when I can get like the demographics who are listening to it and stuff, there's people in Israel and Ireland. I don't know how they're connected. They could be through some Air Force friends that I used to know or whatever, but yeah. And then the other cool thing is it's not a one and done. You're not just talking on this and it's over. Like your kids someday could find this and be like, hey, check it out. My dad was on, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's live at all times.
That's really neat.
Yeah. I think it's a cool, podcasting is just cool. It's sort of in its infancy. I mean, there's big shows out there that make lots of money and it's kind of what they do. But in the sense of a hobby, I mean, it's still the Wild West. I mean, you just do what you want. If we swear, we have to put like explicit thing. But other than that, there's no rules. There's no rules.
I think that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
So we're drinking a whiskey here that Mike brought. What was the name of it?
Angel Envy.
Angel Envy?
I have the bottle here.
How'd you discover it?
Wandering through the ABC.
That was it. That's what you have to do in the ABC is just wander through it.
That's exactly how it was. And the ABC here, they don't have a lot. They don't have a lot.
So, yeah. They're competing with the bootleggers.
That's right.
So I'm a scientist. It's kind of how I have to operate. I mean, I'm medicine and I have to kind of work that way. But then I used to be a type A. I used to be like, checklist. I mean, it's what I did in the military, just checklist. Everything has to be a certain way, get up at a certain time. And then I don't know when it was. It might have been when I was in the military, or it might have been after I deployed into Iraq and stuff like that. I was like, life's too short. There's no reason for a type A. I just kind of turned that off and I just switched myself around. And there's a reason why I'm bringing this up, because I think type A's tend to think concrete. And I used to look at science and stuff as like, no, here's your concrete answer. I guess to some extent I still do that. But with things like fringe science, the outskirts of science, like what things are possible, I started just saying, all right, basically I accepted the fact that really anything's possible. So one article that I was looking at that I'd sent over to you was, one of the big things that I talk about a lot is, because I think it's important, especially since I had kids, is this whole idea of we're organic beings, at least we have been for the last umpteen thousand years. And then with technology, with all these peripheral devices, I mean, like my iPad right there, we're slowly transitioning into this kind of weird area where we're like altering our, we're altering our genetic makeup. We're adding electrodes to ourselves. We're becoming, someone told me that they're like, oh, there's no proof that there'll ever be exoskeletons that you can put on and make a quadriplegic walk again or anything like that, or make people run fast. We're already doing that now. We're strapping cars to us. It's basically an exoskeleton. You put your foot on the gas, you can move heavy things. I mean, it's happening.
I've seen that. There's been some military testing on exoskeletons for infantry types. So
yeah,
they can bear heavier loads on their back and go a lot farther, and it works from the waist down.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to walk with it. So sure, that's a type of exoskeleton. Obviously not out there yet, but
yeah,
but well, that stuff's coming.
They're also turning them into robots. Those things, did you see the, it looks like a donkey without a head. It's got these legs.
I did.
Yeah, and they kick it, and you kind of feel bad for
it's
it.
Like,
yeah, yeah. And stuff, it's like, wait a minute.
It gets back up.
I'm like, man, why'd they have to kick it?
Yeah.
Things made out of screws and all that, which kind of brings up to the point, you know, if we can create something that look like, let's say we have something that looks like a dog that can tell your email, wake you up in the morning. It's technically a robot. It's a computer system. Part of you wants to treat that thing nice, right? They start doing that with people. That's a whole weird can of worms that open up there. But that's kind of what I was going with this article here. Mm-hmm. This is a new type of implantable electrode that can read brain waves. Implantable, it's partially organic, so I'm not exactly sure what it's made out of. Silicone-based electrode, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it goes into some stuff here. But the idea is it's not just metal. It's got stuff that your body can absorb and basically make it part of itself.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and this stuff is, I mean, in the next 5 years, this stuff is going to be commonplace. 5 years. 10 years, I mean, yeah, having a person with Alzheimer's and having chips implanted in their brain, you're sure. Just going to see that. That's just going to be normal. Your memories now can be, I guess, uploaded, downloaded.
Yeah. So what do you think? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Or
personally, I think it's great.
I also think it's pretty great.
Yeah.
Now I think it's great. It's hard to tell. Maybe 5 years, I won't think it's so great. But
I think it's great because in medicine, half the stuff I see scares the shit out of me. You know, like you wake up one day, you have a headache and you're cross-eyed and you have a brain tumor and you're dead.
Yep.
And I mean, Joe Biden's son just died and I was like, he had a brain tumor. And that stuff comes up out of nowhere.
All right.
And that stuff scares the crap out of me.
It's terrible.
And to have medicine like this, where either they can detect it or cure it or whatever, I'll take that over the trade-off of, you know, can you download your thoughts? Will someone be able to broadcast your thoughts Bluetooth?
For sure.
And that stuff's going to happen.
If it can, yeah, I suppose if it can target the tumor and read the abnormality before it becomes an issue,
mm-hmm.
That'd be the trouble, I think, is designing the technology to do something like that.
The technology is going to be there too, though. Where so right now there was a guy in, I want to say he was in France, and another guy, I want to say he was stateside. Yeah. They had wired their brains. So what they did is they I guess they did an MRI and they said, like, think of the color blue or think of the word hello or whatever it was. And they wired the brain. They saw which part of the brain lit up. So they wired that particular part of the brain, and I'm not sure how they did this, maybe with electrodes or some sort of stimulation. And they wired it up to a guy in France, and they had him, same thing, think of the word, and they gave him a list of words to think about, and then they mapped the part of the brain where he was thinking about those words. So ice cream here, cold here, sunshine here, you know. And then the guy in the United States thought about that word, and the guy in France said the word, like he knew what it was. So they were literally using telepathy based on your brain fires off certain neurons when you think of a word, which then transmits into that electrode, gets sent through the web, comes over, stimulates that part of the brain of the guy waiting to, you know, the guy, I guess, receiving the info, and it stimulates. So blue goes to the blue area, and then the guy goes, blue. I'm thinking the word blue.
Oh, that's scary stuff.
Isn't that crazy?
It's scary, and it's crazy, because then that's the sort of thing where you worry that there potentially could be manipulation.
Sure. Well, there's that.
I think of something. I put that thing in your head, and then I think, go rob that store.
Well.
And then you're thinking, you have this overwhelming urge to go rob something.
You never know.
Shoot up this.
Think about 100 years. If people are going to have chips like this in their brain, yeah. That where I assume, my mother-in-law has a pacemaker. She lays down in bed. It talks to the, like a thing, and then it sends it to the hospital. So, I mean, right there, her body is communicating with a computer. And we're doing it all kind of on the outside now, but it's going to get, I mean, it only makes sense that it's going to get
wired. It's a matter of time.
Wired.
Pushing the envelope of what technology and what we're capable of doing. I think it's only a matter of time before you're able to do that. I think that part, though, is a bit scary because it can be used to manipulate a lot of folks.
Sure. Yeah, the big brother type of
thing. Yeah, and then turn them on or turn them off when it's ready. So could you? Yeah. Oh my gosh, I could imagine.
Imagine a whole society of people like that.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. And then you get a guy, a hacker, who's able to hack into the network.
Just shut everyone down.
Yeah. Ooh. Wow, yeah. So now I don't think it's a good idea anymore.
Well, yeah, it's. And then you ever hear of Ray Kurzweil?
No.
He's like a futurist. He writes predictions of where technology is going to go over 10 years.
Oh, okay.
And he talked about, and he has this term called the singularity and transhumanism, and basically when humans and computers kind of just become one.
Sure.
Which to me, after reading it and thinking about it, kind of makes sense. And he...
The merging of the... I guess what it would be is the merging of like the human conscious with artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's right. So he says if we put our, if they can wire our brains and put our thoughts basically into a computer, then we'll be able to download our consciousness. Whether that's us or not, I mean, we'll probably still die and have no clue, but you'll be able to sit down with your great-grandkids and have a conversation about what it was like to grow up based on your thoughts and your biases and your...
That's wild.
Isn't that cool?
There's a movie like that, isn't there?
I'm sure there is.
I might be lying. I don't know.
I just saw Ex Machina.
I haven't seen that yet.
It's a new one.
I want to see it though.
Yeah, you've seen the previews.
I've seen the
previews.
I'm aware of what it is.
It's like pretty cool.
Sexy robot. Where she moves.
I'm sold.
Yeah. I'm totally into that.
Yeah, he goes. It's basically that whole AI weird thing what is AI compared to? To an actual human. And sure. When you're watching the movie, you're like, wait a minute, who's the AI? Uh-huh. You're like, is it this guy? Is it this guy?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
So in the end, everyone dies.
No, you ruined everything.
In the end, the ship sinks, and Kate Winslet lives.
The diamond off the road. That's all it is.
So what is it? What's your favorite thing? Like, what do you...
I guess brings me the most... satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Sure.
Riding motorcycles.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it about motorcycles you like?
I don't know. I think it's the I think it's maybe the freedom where I can get out on a road and go any direction I please.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I suppose you can do that in a car as well, but there's something to it with the wind and just being on a machine.
Yeah.
That's pure machine.
Yeah.
And not a computer like most cars are. So I don't know. I think there's just something pure
You have Harleys, right?
I do. Okay. I did. I didn't start with those. Well, I guess I sort of did. My dad taught me how to ride a motorcycle on his Harley, but I started with a sport bike, and then I got in too much trouble with it. Mm-hmm. I finally got rid of it. Now I have a couple Harleys.
Yeah, sport bikes are scary.
Yeah, they are. Well, I've hurt myself a few times.
Have you really? You've wiped out?
I've gone over the handlebars.
Ooh.
I've slid on curves.
You're scarred up?
Yeah, I have a pretty good one on my knee, and I lost all this here on my forearm. The skin here was road rash all off. It was pretty awesome.
I imagine this was in your teens and 20s? Or?
Yeah, I was a freshman in college, and I got into this accident, and I was afraid to tell anybody, so I didn't go to the hospital. But then I woke up the next morning, and I realized this really hurts. I should probably go do something. So I went on to the clinic on campus, and then the nurse that was there was like, "What happened to you? You need to go to the ER." And I thought, "Well, I don't have insurance. I'm only 21. I can't afford this." And they're like, "Oh, no. Well, I'll take care of you." So she took me into the back. And what she did was more painful than the motorcycle accident. Mm. And it was really my fault.
She scrubbed it up and everything?
Yeah, she scrubbed it up. But before she scrubbed it, I had put on just regular cotton bandages.
Oh, so it stuck to it.
And it all stuck.
Yeah.
And it was my entire forearm and my knee. And she had to rip each piece off one by one.
Fun stuff.
And I wanted to cry.
Yeah.
It was so painful. Yeah, lesson learned. So I got rid of it. Actually, I didn't get rid of it then. I had it for years after. But
yeah. Yeah, it makes you change a little bit when you... We had a guy in my school, he did a similar thing. He was always like popping wheelies and just doing things like that. And he slid off his bike. He was wearing flip-flops. And he just skinned the bottom of his feet and the palms of his hands off. And I remember him just looking miserable, sitting on the cut. Both his hands, he looked like a cartoon character, just wrapped up. Yeah. I wonder if he's still, his nickname was Beefy. I wonder if he's, he could be listening. I don't know. If you are listening, Beefy.
ROTC. I did not do the ROTC program.
What'd you do?
I did the PLC program. I don't know if the Air Force has anything like
PLC?
That. Yeah, Platoon Leader Course.
Mm-mm. Oh, I've never.
I did the best, in my mind, the best way to become an officer in the Marine Corps. There was no ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
I was a regular college kid for 4 years. But there was 2 summers that I had to go to OCS.
Okay.
I did 6 weeks between my sophomore and junior year, and I did 6 weeks between my junior and senior year.
So you break up that 12-week Marine Corps boot camp into that's pretty good.
Yeah, sort of. Well, it is good now
that
it's over, but man, oh man. The first 6 weeks got done, and I was like, I'm never going back.
Yeah.
Terrible. I hate this place.
Yeah.
And then, but then obviously, clearly I went back, and then that was my re-motivation.
So 6 weeks. So you joined when you were in college?
Yeah, I did because I realized, you know, I don't think I say this, but it's not true.
I tell everyone this, but it's completely false.
I want to be careful what I say just in case someone's like, I have a criminal justice degree and it's worth something. And I was like, well, I have a criminal justice degree. What am I going to do with this?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, the Marine Corps is hiring. They're hiring officers. Let's go do something awesome.
So what year was that? It was probably
2003.
Okay. So, yeah, Iraq kicked off.
2002. I remember watching that whole thing and thinking, this is probably something I should probably be part of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And plus, also, I thought my degree was worthless.
Yeah.
I don't know why I did it. I do know why I did it, but.
Did you have, like, family that served, or?
My grandfather was in the Navy in World War II, and then my father's father, so my other grandfather, my mother's father is in the U.S. Navy. My father's father was in the Serbian Army.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he never talked about it until I commissioned into the Marine Corps, and it was one of these things where, oh, you may now understand, so let me tell you a little bit about it. So he did. He was only in it for, I don't know, a few weeks before the Nazis captured him. And then he was in a camp.
Oh, that's the
end of the war.
See, I didn't even know that happened. And I studied modern European history, 2.63 GPA. So I didn't even know that they took Serbia.
Well, I don't know if which is unfortunate because I can't go back and talk to him. But he definitely said that. But he said it was funny because he laughs. Well, he used to laugh about it clearly, but everything they had was horse drawn.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't mechanized anything. So
isn't that crazy? Within a generation, like you knew him.
Yeah, I know. And they got the word that the Nazis were coming. So they got on the horses, they attached the carts, and they were pulling it to the border.
Yeah.
And by the time they got there, they got the word that they'd already taken the city. So they tried turning around and going back. And by then, the city's gone, and like, all right, you're coming with us. They all got taken. But, you know, it's interesting because I think it's almost, there's some serendipity here because that's where he met my grandmother.
Okay.
My grandmother was French, and she was a nurse. Mm-hmm. And then she ended up getting snatched up and thrown, and they used them, the nurses they captured, to take care of the
That's crazy.
POWs.
That's like a Nicholas Sparks movie.
Yeah. I ain't lying to you. My grandmother, she's still alive.
Yeah.
She's like 96 or 150.
Wow.
I don't know. Something.
She's horse drawn. So, yeah. She's got it. I'm going to go 150.
Probably 150. No kidding. That's how that story worked out.
That's pretty cool.
It's amazing how that actually led to my creation.
Yeah. Isn't that, when you start really thinking about it?
Weird.
Let's see if I do the math right. Your great great grandparents. There's like 32 of them.
Yeah,
that's 32 random strangers that if you met them on the street, you'd be like, "Who's this guy?" I don't even. Your great grand.
Crazy.
Yeah, and it takes one false move, and you're not there. Like, or one, you know what I mean? It's one of those weird things. And I've been thinking of it now that I have kids. I'm like, my grandfather. He had flat feet in World War II, and he was training to be a paratrooper. And his feet got all blistered up and infected, and they discharged him. They're like, "Sorry, you can't go." And then his unit went over to Normandy and jumped in. I mean, and this is before he had kids. So airborne into Normandy during the invasion of France, World War II, his odds of living weren't that high.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then I wouldn't be here. Or when I think about my kids, so I came to the squadron. I kind of had the same sort of thing. I was a couple years older than you, so I was working after college. I had a useless degree. I was a history major. What are you going to do with that?
Same as criminal justice. You do nothing with it.
Yeah. You're just like, what, I'm going to be a historian? I mean, technically, I'm a historian, really? So I finished, and I worked in this crappy job. If you listen to episode, What If Podcast, episode 3, you'll hear all this. I was talking to Adam. You know Adam down here in the
I'm still new to this neighborhood.
That's
still
right.
Trying to figure it all
Newbie.
Out.
Yeah. So so basically, long story short, I just took a crappy job. I hated life. I was just sitting there at my cubicle, just this can't be what life is going to be for me. And I went out to I was living in Boston. They had this the tall ships come in, and I was kicking back with my friends, and it was an American sailor came walking by, and there was like a I don't know, Filipino or some other sailor came walking by, and they stopped and saluted. And I was like, that's pretty cool. And these two dudes are foreigners. No idea, you know, but the fact that they are both in service, they saluted each other. And I was like, you know, I could probably do the military. And I started looking into it, and it came down to, I was going to do the Navy. I was going to do the Coast Guard because I love boats. I grew up 20 minutes from the ocean. So, that was always my thing. And then the Air Force just offered a good deal. What happened was the Air Force at the time was short their numbers for officers because they were rebuilding one of their dorms. That's what we call them in the Air Force, dorms. You know, TVs and bathrooms in each room. But they were redoing their dorms, and they so they were going to be short like 100 officers. So they're like, all right, how about this? We'll take you. Do a 6-week course in the summer. We'll teach you how to salute and all that stuff. And then you got to wait. You got to wait 9 months. And every week you got to show up to pick a college anywhere. Show up to their ROTC and just kind of check in. And then next summer we'll commission you.
That's like the most sweetest deal ever.
Yeah. So I quit my job. I worked with my dad just building decks. Just enjoy. I was a substitute teacher. I was 24 maybe. Uh-huh. The funny thing about it is I got out of my little 6-week boot camp, cupcake camp, and I was home, and September 11th happened.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, no way. I'm like, I'm going to go to war. I was like, I thought I was just going to do what everyone did in the 90s, just go from base to base. And I'm like, holy crap. I do my 9 months of staying stateside, just kind of enjoying life. And then I was ready to commission in I just happened to have a chance, and it's of taking a navigator slot. I didn't have to take it. They're like, you want to fly? And I was like, oh, can I think about it? And I thought about it, and I was like, all right, I'll do it. So I was going to be I wanted to be a cop, but they had me as a logistics officer, and I knew I didn't want to be a logistics officer. So I was like, all right, I'll fly. And then I just kind of made up my mind. So just by doing that, I went to Texas, and then from there, I mean, every opportunity I had was just random. I was supposed to go to Dias. I had my orders to fly out of Dias, and then I got a position to fly out of Pope. So now here I am in North Carolina, and I'm new to the squadron. They're all deployed. I'm the noob. No one, you know, I'm an idiot. I don't know what's going on. They all come back. They have a party, and I'm like, I don't go to this party. I don't know anyone in the squadron. You know, but last minute, I just decided to go to the party, and Kara's there with her brother, who's also in my squadron, and that's how I meet her.
That's awesome.
So, like, I was supposed to be in Texas. Actually, I was supposed to be in Dover as a logistics officer. Then randomly, I was supposed to be in Texas flying out of Dias Air Force Base. And then last minute, they said a Pope, North Carolina spot open. So, all right, I'll take that. And now I'm in Pope. And I wasn't going to go to the party, and then decided to go to the party, and now I have two kids.
That's amazing. I think that's awesome.
Isn't that weird how that stuff works out?
I love those stories.
Yeah, but it's really just like, makes you realize, I mean, what if I had been in Dias? Who knows where I'd be right now? I might still be living in Texas.
Yeah.
With completely different kids, different life, different wife, different everything.
Freaking, it'd be weird.
Yeah.
Well, then you'd be podcasting about that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Who knows? Maybe I'd be
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love those stories. My parents have a crazy story.
Yeah.
Yeah, since we're on the topic of stories, I'll tell this one.
Yeah.
I suppose if it sucks, you could just edit it out.
Yeah. But
they'll never listen to this. So she was like a hippie. Mm-hmm. A hippie. Sort of one of those hippie commune things that kind of traveled around.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. And then I guess she got tired of that and got out of it and left. This was like in the late 70s. And she's from Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow she ends up in Arizona. It's Arizona. It is Arizona. She ends up in Arizona. Well, my dad from Michigan buys a Harley. Mm-hmm. It's actually the one I learned how to ride motorcycles on. It's
That's
a 76.
Cool. You still have it?
Yeah, it's nice. Pieces. That's the only problem. He wants to restore it, but it's going to cost a lot of money. But anyways, he gets on this little Harley Sportster, this little 883, and they're kind of tiny if you've ever ridden one of those. And he rides it from Michigan to Arizona on a whim.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like, and I think that's where I get a lot of my wanderlust, where I just kind of want to go and do things. And that's why I really enjoy motorcycles, because you can just kind of go and feel good and ride where, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a good feeling. So anyways... So he rides to Arizona just for the heck of it, and he pulls into a rest stop, and it starts raining, and he's sitting on his motorcycle just resting, and it starts raining. Well, the car next to him, it turns out to be my mom. She looks over, and she's alone because she just broke away from this hippie commune thing.
Yeah.
She's just kind of trying to figure out herself, and looks over and says, hey, it's raining. You want to get out of the rain? Why don't you come sit in the car with me? And that way, when it stops raining, you can get on your bike and do your own thing. Well, one thing led to another, and they ended up getting married, and then the next year
crazy?
I'm born. Yeah, wild.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a crazy story.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, so it's like that happens, and then a year later they're married, and a year later I pop out.
Wow.
now here I am with you.
Have you ever, yeah.
It's out of control.
It really is, and when you start, like, when I was a type A, I used to, like, try to control it all. I was like, I got to control my destiny. I got to control what's going to happen, and that stuff will drive you nuts. And then as a type B, which I've kind of become, I just let it happen, because it's just, I'm reading right now Sam Harris. I don't know if you know who he is.
I've heard the name.
He's got, he's one of those big atheist neurosurgeon, or no, sure. He's a neurologist. But I like a lot of his writing, because he's got a lot of interesting things. And one of them is on free will. And it's about what is truly free will and what we perceive as free will. The idea of if I move my left hand, or if I'm going to move my left or my right hand, I'm going to sit here and think about it, and I could move either one. Either one's going to be a decision that I feel like I can make. And then when I finally make my decision, there's actually science out there that says before you even make your mental decision, your brain's already come up with the answer. And so they can look at parts of the brain that determine that. So when I think my free will is to move it, I've already decided before my consciousness said to move it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes from that to kind of backs it up to almost like hitting a cue ball. So a cue ball, if it had consciousness, thinks I'm heading down the table and I'm going to hit that ball. That's my decision. I'm going to do it. But really, it only started moving because the pool player decided to hit the cue ball to hit the next pool ball.
So what does he think pushes us?
Well, exactly. Well, then that's the existential question. You know, what started the Big Bang? What was the mover? What started all this in motion? But if you consider the fact that after the Big Bang, everything was set in motion, everything after really has no choice of which direction to move. It seems like it does, but it doesn't. So atoms come together, creates, well, so you get atoms together, you get molecules, you get rocks, you get things like that. The things with mass have gravity, you attract other things, and now you've got a planet. You got a planet, it sets into motion the idea of depending on which side you stand at, I don't know, but starts evolution. And then as that goes on, when you get to humans, or let's even just jump a huge leap there. Evolution, boom, now you're born. All your decisions are that you feel like you're making are based on how you've been raised and the biases that you're given and the fears that you develop or the strengths that you develop based on just your experiences. And your experiences are random. They come from, you know, you go outside, you get sunburn. That's a random event, but you back it up. Maybe your parents are, you know, like my parents, born in the 40s and raised us in the late 70s, early 80s, and sunburned. I mean, they weren't putting sunblock on us. Right. So now you're sunburned, and now I'm in my late 30s, and I go outside, I'm like, whoa, I'm going to put on sunblock. Now, was that a conscious decision, or was it because I remember being burned at one point in my life because of the decisions that my parents made, because of how they were brought, so the decisions that their parents made back it all the way back to the Big Bang. Does that make any sense?
It does.
So the idea of free will is more of just, this is his theory, and at this point in my life, because I remember when we started, I was like, anything's possible. I read these books and I'm like, sure, it's a good theory. Let's read into that. And
I also think there's some truth in that. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because I'm not entirely sure what I believe.
Yeah.
I was raised one way. Mm-hmm. I was raised Lutheran.
Okay.
But I don't.
You guys listen to Martin Luther? Is that the? No, yeah. No. That was a horrible joke. I was trying to go with who's.
No, but that's the guy who started it.
Luther Vandross. That's what I was going to say. I was like, guys, listen to a lot of Luther Vandross. Right. We're Lutheran.
Luther actually started Luther. Yeah, because he was angry at the Catholics.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
he nailed the everything that was wrong with them on this door and created.
I was trying to make a joke and I just forgot. That's why I'm not in comedy.
But you actually said exactly what it was.
Hey, check out this joke. Is that where that guy nailed the thing on the door? Oh wait.
Oh, that's totally. That's actually how it happened. I'm not sure where the joke was. So I've recently begun changing a lot of my thoughts on things, and I think there is other influences, and I'm not entirely sure how to say this. I've only read a few things on it because this is also very new to me. But I do think there's maybe there's a God, right? Or there's a collective consciousness or unconsciousness, and what that does is it kind of helps guide us and makes decisions, or and I kind of think of it because, I mean, you can walk into a room and you can see a person, and you can sometimes you can tell whether or not that guy's got command presence. I always attributed this to like leadership. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild because I used to teach that at the basic school, but you can see a guy, you can tell a leader from a follower, like a strong leader.
Yeah, without talking or doing that.
Talk to him, and he doesn't have to say a single word. It's just the way he carries himself, and he pushes this sort of energy.
Yeah,
right. So there's energy that's being transmitted from him to everybody else, and I think that's true with everything. And I think that kind of leads us to make certain decisions or forces us to do certain things. So where you think, well, perhaps you're making a conscious decision. Well, in fact, it's maybe energy that you're feeling from someone else or something else, or it's just collective unconscious that's influencing us. And we don't have the ability to really understand how that works or feel those effects on us because we only use 10% of our brain. So perhaps the other 90% is absorbing this stuff and kind of influencing things in for us to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like you're walking in a direction and all of a sudden it's like this doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
Something bad is about
to happen. How do you know that?
Yeah, and it's like, how do you know? And I can remember times in Iraq where we're walking on a patrol and it's kind of like, this is not okay. You can feel it. There's like this negative energy. And you're like, this is bad. And sure enough, either bombs are starting to get dropped on us.
We'll
start shooting. But you can feel it happening before the physical events start happening. So I believe that to be true. I think there is some sort of unconscious the other forces out there that are, you know, and maybe those are all back to the Big Bang. I never heard of that before, so that's interesting to think of.
That would be the lack of free will where everything's set in motion. But there's also like, so take a rock and take a person and look at them side by side. They're completely different, right? Only based on our observation and our I guess history with those items. When you break it down to the molecular level and then the atomic level and then subatomic level, it's all empty space.
It's all energy.
Yeah, it's all energy. Yeah. That's all it is. Yeah. And I was bringing this up with Paul. We had a podcast, podcast 3, I think it was, where actually I got this from The Sopranos because I don't remember what episode it was, but the guy was talking about, he goes, you look out in a field and you see two tornadoes and you say to yourself, that's two tornadoes. But really, you're just looking at one thing. You're looking at the wind that's taken on two different forms, right? And the only reason why you can see those two tornadoes is because they pulled up the dirt, but it's still the same wind.
Right.
And then Buddhists will look at, they'll look at a squirrel running up a tree and they don't see that. They just, really, they see nothing because it's all the same. And I always thought that was a bizarre way to think about it. But then I think, it makes sense. We're running around, we have everything around us, but when you break it down, we define things because we can see it and we can interact with it. Take away sight, take away our conscious interaction, you know, how we define things, and everything's the same. It's empty space. Mm-hmm. You start looking at how like quarks, that's a subatomic particle that makes up, I don't know, maybe the nucleus or I'm not a chemist, so I don't know. You got protons, neutrons, and electrons. So they're made up of subatomic particles. And they come in and out of existence, right? If you mess with one quark, so it spins a certain way, are they called quarks?
I don't know. I'm also not a scientist.
So. Yeah. Well, whatever it is, this particle will spin clockwise, and it'll interact with another one 10 feet away, 1,000 miles away, whatever it is, instantaneously. One turns left, the other one turns right. One turns right, the other one turns left. And scientists really don't... It's quantum mechanics. It's proven because they're making computers now that are quantum computers that are working on this. Yeah. So their idea is if we can manipulate a quark, if you're a physicist and you're listening to this and you're... all right, I'm not a physicist, so I don't know what it's called. But if you manipulate a quark and it can change direction without time... like getting in the way, then they say this is a good way to maybe communicate with people who are going to go to Mars or something like that. You delay you take away that delay. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
So that stuff's out there. That stuff exists. And when I just said that stuff exists. And when I think about that stuff, it makes me, everything I was brought up with, I was brought up Catholic. All this, like the rigidity of life and the definition that I had for everything, and you know, this exists, this doesn't exist. Why? Because you know, either the Bible tells me so, or my parents tell me so, or history tells me so. Once you start thinking about that stuff, you're like, wait a minute, that's just completely opens your horizon and says, well, you know, there's got to be something more out there. Mm-hmm. And whether that's agnosticism or whether it's I don't know what it is. And personally, I think people that can. So agnostic just means not knowing, agnostic, without knowing. And the point there is that when people define themselves a certain way, really, you're just going to go ahead and take that stance? You're 100% sure that that's what's going on? When there's so much evidence out there that there's just something else going on, it just makes more sense to kind of be more accepting and to kind of think outside that box.
I agree, yeah.
Uh-huh. In an infinite universe or an infinite reality, every option has as much weight as another option.
Well, as far as we know, it's infinite.
I mean, that's true too.
It could certainly be a finite universe. Like, we could just hit a wall one day and that'd be,
yeah.
that'd be the end of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I guess it is a finite universe, right? Because it's expanding. So
right, yeah. At some point, it won't expand any further, or it would just completely dilute. Or
well, they say it runs out of energy and everything just freezes.
Huh?
Isn't that weird? Think about that. That. Weird.
But wouldn't it? Huh. If we're freezing space and not have the ability to move.
Just it reaches its end point. Think about that when you're like worrying about sealing your granite countertops. You're like, you start thinking about big things like that and you're like, I don't care.
Nothing's important anymore.
Nothing's important. Nihilism. Oh, did I pay my... I don't care.
It doesn't even matter, bro. I'm running
anyway. Yeah, but I mean, what are you going to do? Here, do you want to try that one?
If it's up to you. I know that's near and dear to your heart. I don't want to.
I've had it for like 10 years. And,
wow.
Well, let's see. 2005. So, yeah, it's 10 years.
Then I have to bring over.
Comes out every now and then.
That vintage reserve stuff that I have.
Hasn't come out in a while. So, here. Tell me when.
You do what you do because I may never turn it off if you keep pouring it.
And what's funny, you sent me, and if for the listeners, we're drinking whiskey. Mike sent me a text. He's like, should I bring some whiskey? And I was like, yeah, my off switch for whiskey is broken, so I shouldn't drink any. I got to work tomorrow. And then I'm like, he comes over and I'm like, oh, here's, I got my own bottle right here. And, you know, the rest is history.
And that's how that goes.
Well, Rob down the road gave me a beer to try, and I dropped it on the floor, and it shattered. Well, it didn't shatter, but the beer went everywhere.
But the beer did.
I was kind of disappointed because I wanted to try that.
It was a sad day for beer.
Mm-hmm. So we're drinking 10-year-old single malt scotch that I got from a 800-year-old town in Prestwick, Scotland. Our plane broke, and we were stuck there for 2 weeks, and I went to this distillery, and in Scotland, I guess they make whiskeys. It's like a local thing. So, yeah, and you were saying this,
as far as I know, yeah, with my limited experience in
you got to know this stuff because you're gonna be a legal drug dealer if you're gonna own a bar.
Yeah, I should probably get smarter on this real soon.
Yeah,
from what I understand, there's four major regions.
Okay.
How they distill the Scotch whiskey, and depending on what region it's from, there's different notes and flavors and characteristics, and it's either very heavy on the peat or very earthy, and then some other regions it's a bit smoother, so it tastes more like an Irish whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
But I could be lying to you. I'm pretty sure that I'm pretty close.
So, to me, whiskey is brown. Has that whiskey taste to it. Smell strong. Me and my best friend growing up, it's funny, he became a navigator in the Navy like 2 years before I went to the Air Force, and it was just random that I became a navigator in the Air Force. He flies one of the few prop planes in the Navy, P-3, and okay. I flew the only prop plane, or the only really mass-produced prop plane in the Air Force, the C-130, so it was just one of those weird coincidences growing up.
What's a C-17?
That's a big old jet.
That is a jet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fancy, real fancy. They have a stick and air conditioning and all that.
I rode in one of those. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a Cadillac. Yeah. Ours is like a 1970 pickup truck with duct tape and just stinks.
We have those too, man. The yeah. C-130. That's really the only plane we have in the Marine Corps.
That's right.
Well,
you guys do.
Cargo.
And your navigators are enlisted. That was because in our navigator school, the...
We have officer navigators too.
But oh, really?
They're generally in the, they're backseaters in F-18s.
Okay, yep, that's right, yeah.
They're in those weird...
They get a lot of weird jets out there.
It's electronic warfare.
The Prowler?
Prowler.
Yeah, they got four-seater.
Something like
that.
I'm not a pilot. I was a combat engineer. I build stuff and blow stuff up.
That's right.
That's all I'm good for.
What's the difference between combat engineer and EOD?
Oh, it's a huge difference.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So you just blow stuff up where an EOD guy goes in and takes it apart?
Well, yeah. I mean, they started as obviously ordnance disposal guys,
mm-hmm.
but it was for like bombs that didn't drop off of airplanes.
Okay.
So they were disposed of it that way. Well, then this whole crazy thing with IEDs took off. And at first, it was the combat engineers that would take care of it because we are trained for mine detection and mine clearing.
Mm-hmm.
And we still do that. And if anyone used mines, we could do it very well. But no one really uses mines that much anymore. But the engineering mission was so huge to build stuff and to do breaching operations when Iraq, we had to give this IED clearing job to somebody else. So EOD kind of took on this additional task because it was similar to what they were already doing by disposing different types of ordnance already. So they just kind of applied that over to IED. So they deal very heavily in IEDs now, where the combat engineer, we can, and we're trained to go out there and do those sorts of things, but our mission is quite a bit more diverse where, you know, a combat engineer can go in with the infantry types and blow down walls and doors for urban ops. And EOD is not going to do anything close to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. We build stuff too. Marine combat engineers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess that makes sense too, yeah.
We build things out of plywood and 2x4s. It's about as good as it gets. We don't do what Prime Beef does in the Air Force.
That's right, Prime Beef and Red Horse. Yeah.
You guys are like, that's legit engineering.
That's pretty cool stuff.
We're like Neanderthals, man.
they'll go in and like just blast out a field. They're armed. They're heavily armed, and they'll go in and just build a airfield like that.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
what you guys can do. We're not designed that way. We're designed to get in and out of things extremely quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Give the guys the minimum what they need.
Well, it's the Marines.
Yeah. That's it. Like we come in hitting. We just come in swinging.
Yeah.
Just pounding.
It's like the we used to joke about the Rangers. So we would fly. That's what I liked about my job is I got to work with everyone. You know, we got to drop SEALs and their Zodiacs off in the ocean, or we got to work with the Rangers, or we got to work with everyone, the Marines. I did the when we invaded Fallujah, there was I might be getting two memories mixed up. We were flying Marines in during the battle and the buildup and during the battle, and then we'd do medevacs and stuff like that. That was number one. And then we also did a MEF. What was that? That was like Marine.
The MEF?
Yeah, Marine Expeditionary Force. Yeah. There was a massive swap out in maybe 06, 05, 06, around that time frame. It was the largest MEF swap out since World War II.
Oh, wow.
And we were flying 24/7, just coming in 60 Marines, pick up 60 Marines, fly them out. Pick up 60 new Marines, fly them in. It was just all day long. I mean, just planes after planes after planes, and they did a complete swap out. And I want to say it was around the same time. It might have been right after Fallujah. I don't remember now. I don't actually remember even the point of me bringing that up. Got to work with a lot of people, so that was fun with it. Yeah, it was a fun job.
That's the best part, I think, was working with all the different people.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we had SEALs that were wearing suits that. We're protecting the Emirates and the the Iraqi president. I remember we were moving the Iraqi vice president, and our contact was a SEAL. And I'm going back there looking for like some guy all kitted up, you know. And here he is in a suit and tie. And I'm like, hey, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's how I learned. Actually, that's how I learned more about weapons. Was not through my little weird OCS experience. I learned the M9, and that's all I fought. Sure. That's all I shot. Or that was it. My M9. I didn't learn M4s or M16s till I became a civilian and got into it. Yeah, I never even held one. So I used to go back and I used to chat with the Marines. I'm like, hey, tell me about your gun. Because I'd try to small talk with them, especially, I mean, these were young grunts, like 18, 19. Mm-hmm. And they didn't care. They were just, we can't wait to go up to Iraq. And I was like, so I'd just go and talk about their guns, and they'd be like, M240, whatever. And they'd show me all about it.
Rattle it off like it's a thing to do. It's amazing.
And that's how I got into it. Really, I mean, I grew up I grew up into shotguns and a little bit of, I mean, a 22 caliber rifle. I still have my first rifle upstairs. But no, I didn't really get into modern weapons until I flew the Marines around everywhere and had them teach me about them.
There's nothing they love more than talking about their guns.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. It's amazing.
Yeah.
There's a rare chance, very rare. But I still know some folks up in Quantico since I worked up there.
Mm-hmm.
And what we would do is put on something called Marine Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for Congress. And really Congress never showed up. It was generally the congressional staffers would show up. And this is kind of our dog and pony show. To keep funding alive for the Marine Corps, so we can keep buying, guns and equipment and stuff. And once a year, we put it on. And I remember one time I was responsible for doing all the demolition work because I was the engineer in Quantico. So I built all these explosives. But the reason I want to bring this up is there's a very rare chance, if I know somebody who's still up there, to get us into Marine Day, and you can fire everything. I took my wife.
Going now.
I'm like, yeah, let's totally do this. But so there's the Congressional Day where the Congress, their staffers come and we put on this amazing show. Well, we do a dry run, which is really not a dry, it's a wet run the day prior to make sure everything's good. And that's Family Day. So all the Marines who are putting on the show, who are doing all this cool stuff for these staffers, brings their family. And I got to bring my wife. So she fired almost every gun in our inventory. Yeah. From the M9, little 9mm pistol, to our M4, to our shotgun, to the 240, the 249, the 50 cal machine gun,
nice.
The Mark 19, the 203 grenade launcher that's under the M4.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. You get changed. And you ride in, and then we have a static display, which you're probably familiar with anyway, but we bring in all our helos and all those things, and then our 777s there, which is the artillery. The engineers are demonstrating it. But then the AAVs out there and tanks are out there, and you're getting rides and those things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, there's a chance. I could call up there, but if you're interested, maybe we can go up there one day.
I can easily go to the range and blow through $200 worth of ammo in a half hour. So yeah, it's just something I like to do.
They won't give you 200 rounds. If you get a chance and you and I can go up there, you get like a burst on the 249. So it's like, okay, so move it along. You know? It's like people waiting, you know?
I've never fired an automatic weapon. Like I said, I thought,
but
I wanted to be.
It's like, you know, on a 50 cal. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's hard not to smile.
Yeah, that's the one disappointing thing about going to the Air Force is that stupid M9, that Beretta. At one time, we used them so little, I took the clip out and it was rusted and the bullets weren't even, And, but yeah, cause I mean, we flew in unsecure airfields and stuff like that. But in our world, in the C-130 world, we're just a big fat target. We can't shoot back. There's no guns on the C-130. So we spent our time getting shot at and then saying, oh, well, they didn't hit us.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Or helicopters. Our biggest threat in order was helicopters, because we're going to Balad, and helicopters all over the place. And they're not talking. They're VFR, meaning they're just looking. They're not being monitored by the tower. So that was our biggest threat. Next biggest threat was just crew complacency. We get tired flying missions all day long, and you do something stupid, forget to put up your gear or put your gear down. And then at the bottom was the threat from the enemy, which, I mean, it was there, but it was, if you got engaged, you know, you've heard that whole thing, hours of boredom the amount of like combat that I saw overseas could probably fit into a 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Because an engagement for us is boom, they shoot a rocket at you. That was mostly it. They try to hit you with like a RPG. Actually, most is probably small arms fire. And you see it and you're like, all right.
Yeah.
Hope you don't hit us. And then RPGs, which are everywhere. And again, that whole engagement, it feels like it takes 3 hours because you don't want this thing to hit you. It hits you, you're done. But once it's over, you're like, you know,
bored.
4 seconds just went by and you're like, oh, all right. And then we never got to shoot back. And I hated that. The one time, yeah, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's not much.
It's just, it's part of the job and you just kind of accept it. Oh, and thunderstorms. That was another bad thing. I've had a friend killed by a thunderstorm.
That's terrible.
Yeah, those were the bad things. But yeah, the enemy was kind of low on that totem pole. Shows you who we were dealing with. They gave a local farmer a rocket and then just be like, shoot it at C-130. They're here to convert you to Christianity.
I think that's what, we've had a couple of weird instances like that.
Yeah.
Like just random people like, do this for us.
Yeah.
We'll leave you alone. And yeah, weird.
Like, what do you think it's like being a veteran today? I bring that up because everyone has their stories of like, we hear about our World War II grandparents, and you probably have another perspective because you have foreign World War II grandparents. I don't know how they were treated over in Europe because they were on the Allied side if they were taken by the Nazis.
Yeah, I don't know either. He didn't talk much about it.
Really? Versus my dad, who never really talked about it. He was Vietnam era, but he was in the Navy and they never deployed. But he was still in uniform in America, and that wasn't a cool thing to be back in the 60s.
No, yeah.
And then nowadays, there's really, I think the number is 0.45%.
There's definitely less than one.
Yeah. So you have veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, or actually it's like veterans of World War II, who was like, I don't know, 15%.
Yeah.
And then Vietnam was like 10%. And then this war is 0.45%. And, basically what I'm getting at is my experience with it has been a complete disconnect. Like most Americans who don't have a relative or a friend that was in the military have a complete and total disconnect about what the military does, what we did for the last 15 years.
I know exactly what you're saying. I actually thought about it a lot lately, mostly because I just got out in October.
That's right. So it's still new for you.
And it kind of freaks me out sometimes. Part of me was, I had no idea there's so many veterans and actually still active duty guys. And once I found that out, I was a bit disappointed.
Yeah. I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
But that makes sense.
Not in a bad way. I mean, I'm not disappointed now. I really wanted to get away from it.
Yeah.
It's hard. So not for any bad reasons. I really enjoyed my time in the Marine Corps. I would have liked to stay in, but it was time to go. But it's interesting because you were less than 1%, but patriotism is still pretty good, and people really, I think, genuinely care and thank people.
Yeah, they always think. Yeah,
and it's almost too much. It's almost too much. So I don't know. I guess my biggest problem since getting out and now being a veteran as opposed to an active duty guy where I was surrounded by other active duty guys is I'm beginning to meet more and more people who are like what you said. They don't have any families or friends that were in the military and they have no idea what guys like officers have been through, especially guys who have seen combat. And it's hard to put things in perspective. And when you listen to them, I guess, kind of talk about some of their problems or their issues or some of the hardest things they face in life, I almost want to smack them in the head and be like, are you kidding?
Yeah. Well, that's
always blown up. and the worst thing that's happened to you is this.
Yeah.
You're out of control. And it's my problem.
Yeah.
And I can identify that. And it's something that I have to work through and just kind of calm myself down and really put things back into perspective, because the only way you're going to reintroduce yourself into like a normalcy is to remember that these people have no idea what guys like us have been through.
Yeah.
Even if an active duty guy's never seen combat, just some of the training and different things, I think, plays a pretty significant role in how you develop. But so that's it. It's been a struggle. And it surprised me because I didn't think it was going to be such a struggle. But
yeah.
It's actually kind of it's been more of a struggle than I thought it would be, especially talking to just whoever. Now that I'm branching out and meeting new folks because I'm new to this area, it's different.
I think that's the natural, like, to want to get away from it originally or initially is natural. I wanted to get away from it. I didn't pictures out there and stuff. I didn't have any of that out. I was just like, all right, because my separation from the military wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to be, I was an operator. I liked operations, medically disqualified from flying. And then they were basically like, oh, you can ride a bench for the rest of your career. And I wasn't going to do that. So I was kind of pissed off a little bit. And so I just put everything away. And then I went into medicine. I rarely talked about being a veteran to anyone. Because I had to come in as a medical assistant. I was doing the bottom of the rung work, stocking shelves. And that's how I wanted to do it. I want to come from the bottom and work my way up just to see if this is really what I wanted to do. You go to classes or you do that. And like you said that, you meet people, that's the worst thing that happened to you. Are you serious? you get a connection with veterans that you can't get anywhere else. And then it almost becomes inevitable. I mean, there's a magnetism there that you're just drawn to them. And then, and it's that whole thing that you share a common experience. I mean, even if they weren't in combat, those little things, you automatically have a connection. And you don't have to know that person to have that connection. I mean, once you start to talk to them, you know, they're a veteran, and you kind of have that little bit of commonality. That
I agree. And now that I'm starting to know more people, I'm actually very thankful that there's more veterans.
Yeah, now you are?
Yeah, now I am, yeah. Well, honestly, I'm trying to figure it out because this is still all new to me.
You know, yeah, but still, you haven't been out a year. Take the time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Kind of figure it out.
So it's coming along.
I've been out 8 years. I can't believe that.
Wow. I mean, I think I was in for just under 9. So you've been out just about as long as I was in.
Wow. Yeah. How old are you?
What am I? I'll be 34 this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's actually, 34. So I went in late, I guess. I don't know how that works out. I'm 38. So, but yeah, I did. I went in late at like 25.
I was probably 24.
Oh, really?
No, that can't be right. I must have been 20. It was 2006.
What are we drinking?
What? What day is this?
We've been talking for 36 hours.
Where am I?
All right. Well, it was good talk, man. You did, we didn't really get into any of the things that we brought up, but it went pretty well. Now it's,
no, I'm sorry.
It worked.
It's me, man.
That's why I like doing this. That was the other thing too. My goal was, when I first started, I'm like, we don't know who we're living around. You just start chatting with people, and everyone's got some sort of interesting story. I can't tell you how many people I'm like, hey, do you want to do this podcast? And they're like, nah, and then you sit down and they're like, they get into it and they got some good things to talk about.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. And again, this is podcast 7. So I want to do a bunch of these.
Yeah, yeah.
And I assume that when I get to podcast 25, I'll be like, what are we doing? Drinking? That's so unprofessional. That's right. Oh, well.
Well, it was fun. I did enjoy this. This was good.
Yeah. Come back again. Bring some more booze.
For sure. I have a lot more. There's plenty where this came from.
I'll try not to spill mine and end up having to go into the whiskey at that point. Closing song is...
God, this music's cool, man.
Yeah, it's really cool. Oh, yeah, I didn't get to show you all my things. I got this one. This one's really cool. I play this one like every podcast, and no one likes it. And they're like, why are you freaking playing this song again? This one's called The Killbots Are Coming.
Popular culture has taught us anything. It is that someday mankind must face and destroy the growing robot menace.
I love it.
It's the growing robot menace. You never know. I was brought up with, I was a kid and I saw Terminator, and I was convinced. I'm like, this is going to happen. Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to try to kill me. See, I'm old enough that I remember when Arnold Schwarzenegger was bad on the Terminator, and then he became good. I don't know what that was all about.
Sounds like it's...
When I'm with...
We should have used that one throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Just going like, hey, live studio. The Waitwood If podcast is brought to you today. This one is called... These guys are called Poddington Bear. Again, you go on FMA. I think it's Free Music Archive, and they just have tons of stuff. So, yeah, I just downloaded a bunch of it, and it's cool because you can use it and not get sued, which
that's,
I like.
That's the best part.
I should send them an email. Let them know. Oh, this is when I was doing like news.
Breaking news.
Yeah. I had a segment where we would actually do news when I was just trying to figure out this whole thing. Listen to some of the earlier podcasts. They were pretty bad, and we were doing that. We were like... But no, this is the closing song. And this podcast was going weekly when I was all motivated. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do a poet podcast every day. And then it slowly moves. Now it's every 2 weeks, pretty much is kind of where it's at, which is fine. I don't know. I have no say. And that's the other thing. I don't have a
say. Hey, go away.
Yay, whatever works. Yeah. Good, right? What's a year? Fine.
Hey.
But I do have a Twitter. It's @ WWI podcast, if I remember, because I haven't tweeted from in a little bit. Our email is waitwhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. We're on Facebook. I have, I think, 14 followers, so that's looking good.
I have to check it out. No, I did not know you were on Facebook.
Oh, we have a Facebook.
Now I know.
I think that's all. So I hope you enjoyed today's show, and we'll do this again sometime. Thanks.